Slovakia under the communist regime. On 25th February 1948, it came to a coup. The so-called socializing process began. Nationalization of industry and of land ownership. In the wake of this land reform, the church lost all its possessions. Most newspapers and periodicals were banned, and the Catholic organizations that still existed were abolished. In April 1949, the Central Committee of the Communist Party in Prague convoked a commission of 6 members, which was given the task of beginning the systematic liquidation of the Catholic Church. At the same time, the Slovakian Department for Church Affairs, which was given full power over the churches, was created. On 28 April 1950, the Greek Catholic Church was abolished and integrated into the Orthodox Church, a process reversed in 1968. As early as June 1949, an attempt had been made to cut off the Catholic Church from the Vatican. There was even a bid to win over so-called peace priests for this project. Priests were forced to resign an oath. Priests were forced to sign an oath of allegiance to the state. Special secretaries appointed by the state were installed in the offices of all the bishops' houses, where they were given absolute control. All seminaries except the one in Bratislava were dissolved. New laws were passed according to which the churches, and therefore each priest and religious sister, were made dependent on the state. Understandably, there were many who, in this time of affliction, resisted vehemently against the new system. The church reacted with the excommunication of communists. The persecution of the church culminated in 1950 when all convents were dissolved under the pretext that they were places of rebellion against the people's democracy. Religious were isolated in concentration convents. The sisters who served as nurses in the hospitals were allowed to continue their work for the time being, as there were no trained personnel to replace them. For this reason, Sister Zenga too continued her work in the hospital at Bratislava. The church was and remained the adversary of Marxist ideology. Sister Paula Krivankova, an eyewitness, reported in retrospect from Vienna in 1991, "We were celebrating the Eucharist in the chapel of our provincial house. No one was sure whether we would finally end up in Siberia. In the courtyard, 22 ambulances were ready to transport our old and sick sisters to an internment camp. We boarded the bus. During the night, we reached Bohosdorf. Here, 150 Dominican sisters, 225 Holy Cross Sisters, 30 novices and 20 candidates found some scanty shelter in the former house of the Jesuits. The sisters accommodated there had worked mainly in schools, hostels, and homes for children. Soon we had to begin our work in the porcelain industry, in textile factories, in the fields of the nationalized farm, etc. It was customary that the novices received the veil before making their profession. We got the veil, but instead of making our profession, we went to a factory that produced screws. There we stood at the lathe for 8 hours a day. We worked in a big hall with about 20 machines. The air was polluted with oil. We got particles of iron shavings in our eyes. Sisters were often shifted from one place to another by the secret police. It was customary that we were arbitrarily transferred from one factory to another. This demanded each time some further adjustment. In order to complete the stipulated quota within 5 years, a spinning mill was set up in the mountains and workers were urgently needed there. Our hostel was 70 kilometers away from the place of work. We had therefore to rise every day at 3 a.m. and by 5 o'clock we stood at the machines in the factory. We had night shifts. Also, when the supply of electricity was insufficient, the nights were long and the workshops very cold. We were not feeling heroic. We were vulnerable and defenseless. Far away from home, constantly supervised by the state security police, and many of us were of poor health. Many religious priests and seminarians saw no way out of the situation except in flight to the West. Yet it was legally impossible to leave the country. Illegal ways had to be found, and this often at the risk of one's life. Any assistance given to those who wanted to escape was considered high treason and therefore severely punished. Stasenka's life and death witnesses to the condition in communist prisons at that time. Tell your heart that the fear of suffering is worse than the suffering itself, and that no heart has ever suffered when going in search of its dreams. For every second of the search is seconds encounter with God and with eternity, said Paulo Coelho. The climate of mistrust and the fear of informers did not end abruptly at the front door of the government hospital of Bratislava, where Sister Zenga was working. The nurses got to know from their patients what was happening outside. At that time, there were many who had been tortured by the secret police and had to be hospitalized as a result of the physical strain they had undergone. Sister Zenga too was confronted with such patients. Often they were priests who had been in concentration houses where conditions were catastrophic. One of them was a certain Father Santner. He had been captured while trying to escape across the border. Had been sentenced and spent years in prisons under the most difficult conditions until he was brought to the government hospital at Bratislava with a serious heart condition. Sozenga took great interest in the fate of her patients. She felt close to Father Santner, since they both shared the same concept of a meaningful life. Thus, despite an absolute prohibition, they celebrated Mass in her tiny room. Sozenga never shrunk back from such risks. She was convinced that she had always to follow the dictates of heart and reason. Once she was certain, she knew no fear. Living by her principles, she transcended all limitations and often endangered herself. Convinced by her ideals, she arranged for Father Santner to leave his ward now and then and go to the building opposite where religious sisters were working. Caring for this priest consumed much time, and Sister Zenga did everything possible to prolong his stay in the clinic. Looking back, Father Santner related, "When I was finally supposed to leave the clinic and return to prison, the equipment that could have diagnosed the condition of my heart suddenly failed to function, and without such a diagnosis, I could not be discharged from the hospital. The Sister Sengha managed to prolong my stay in the hospital." The lawyer, Amicus, could never forget Sister Sengha either. He had been apprehended for subversive activities and imprisoned in Bratislava. When conditions in prison caused his health to fail, he had to be brought to Bratislava for medical treatment at the government hospital. An attendant, a ruffian, took him from one place to another. Sozenga was chanting at the entrance to the medical ward, and they recognized each other immediately. They hailed from the same village. According to regulations, Joseph Mikus was permitted to answer the questions asked by his attendant, but was not allowed to enter into conversation with anyone else. Sozenga knew about this regulation very well, but without a moment's hesitation, she spoke to the prisoner in a matter-of-fact way. Joseph Mikus never forgot this cordial greeting, such spontaneous reactions to others. Disregarding possible consequences were typical of Sozenga. Her primary motivation always was love of neighbor and thus of God. Sozenga was very serious about her obligations as a nurse. She always worked with professional competence, backed by very high human ideals. Being a practicing Christian, she felt especially responsible for the poor, the weak, and the sick. In her younger years, she once wrote, "Lord, my soul stands before you like a beautiful spring day. What are you going to do with this spring day? Will you send hot days that make the blossom fall from the trees so that its fragrance disappears and the songs of the birds are silenced? Let what has to happen happen, but protect me against one thing. Never permit my soul to become lazy and callous. I want my life to be filled with effort, work and challenges. Without constant quest, my soul dies to you, to myself and to my neighbor. This shows clearly that Sister Zenga had no intention of choosing an easy life. She was not interested in spending her years as comfortably and carefree as possible. At that time, however, she could not have foreseen the unimaginably hard trials that were waiting for her. Young Sister Zenga often reflected on the meaning of her life. She looked upon laziness as a very dangerous tendency and defended herself against it in any of its forms. Her desire for a rich, fulfilled life caused her to go out to others with awareness, sensitivity, and interest. Obviously, she was highly successful in this. Sister Zenga too had to reconsider her function in the difficult situation that existed during the totalitarian regime. The time had come to take greater risk and to accept new challenges. Only later did she fully realize that this attitude led to a confrontation with the communist government. We can, however, be sure that she was aware of the signs of the times. Therefore, she also sensed that she would hardly be spared any unpleasant consequences. On receiving news of the forceful deportation of a group of Holy Cross sisters, together with their provincial superior, who hailed from Kriva, Sister Zenga was shocked and afraid. On 26th September 1950, they had been forcibly taken from Podunajske, Piskipis to Bedumerais. The deportation of the sisters and the confiscation of their property had been carried out by the secret police under the supervision of the state's security bureau. Sister Zenga still worked in the X-ray department of the hospital at Bratislava. The pressure on the church and its personnel increased day by day. Sister Zenga was plagued by questions. How much longer would she be able to continue her work in the hospital? How great was the probability that her contact with the sick and tortured representatives of the church would be discovered? Till 20th February 1952, it looked as though nothing would happen to her. But then came the fateful morning. The rumor of a raid to be carried out in the hospital spread among the sisters like wildfire. In fact, the chapel where the sisters were gathered for the morning service was already occupied by the secret police. It is not known how this news reached Sister Zenga, but she is supposed to have said, "Now it is my turn." Only later, the implications of this exclamation would be understood. on 14th January 2000. A witness related the following. After breakfast, we wanted to go to our work. The hospital teamed with policemen. One sister was arrested in front of our eyes. When Sister Zenka saw this, she said, "Now it is my turn too." She asked me to follow her to the room where she worked. There she had hidden some documents, which she asked me to take and to hide somewhere else. Sister Zenka had already made packets for priests who were preparing for flight. Those packets she quickly threw into that trash can. I had hardly left the room when I was questioned where Sister Zenka could be found. Some sisters were already being interrogated, while she, knowing full well that she would soon be apprehended, gathered a few toilet articles. Then Sister Zenka was arrested, together with a few other sisters. 1 month later, the trial took place, and Sister Zenka was convicted of high treason. For which the severest penalty was imposed on her. What had taken place behind the hospital walls? What caused Sister Zenka, an efficient worker who had till then not been an offender in any way, to be convicted of high treason?